have to go back.
I am the one who knocks. Run, Barry, run.
Coming to King, you best not miss.
And there ain't no party like a Liz Lemon party, because a Liz Lemon party is mandatory.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the PickTV podcast. I'm Diego, and joining me today is Laura.
Hello.
And Sarah.
Hello.
Hey, Sarah, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm glad to be back.
But are there any new shows, since we haven't had you here, any new shows that have piqued your interest?
I don't know if you guys agree with me or not, but I think the fall season this year has been a lot stronger than we've seen in a couple years. I've picked up, I'm really into The Good Place. I'm really enjoying Pitch a lot. I'm really enjoying This Is Us a lot. Timeless is surprising me in that it's better than I expected it was going to be.
Definitely.
This is a little tip of my hand to my Peak TV trophy later on, but Pamela Adlon's Better Things on FX is just blowing me away week after week. So there's been like 6 or 7 new things that have been on, and that never happens.
Nice. Yeah.
That is very true, yeah. And you mentioned several broadcast shows, which is also a very rare thing. So,
Yep, and exciting. Yeah.
It's kind of fun.
Yeah, well, I'm very glad you're enjoying those. And yeah, now that I think of it, once you mentioned those shows, yeah, it's been stronger than expected. I think it has reflected in the ratings as well.
Yeah, I think so.
I feel like every year we've seen like broadcast is dying and TV viewers are not, you know, watching linearly and stuff. Right. But this year, it seems to be not that bad. So anyways, we're not gonna discuss the news because again the last show was like a month and a half back. Yeah. So any news that happened you've already seen and discussed. So we're gonna discuss the main discussion topic of this episode is gonna be series finales. And you'll know why very soon because it's pretty self explanatory, but let's get into what a series finale is. Do you agree that the definition that series finale has grown over the past, I don't know, I'm going to say 10 years? I mean, before Lost, which in 2000 and, what was it? Around 2007, Lost decided on their own to end the show 3 years from now. And that was unheard of, pretty much. Would you agree?
I think a lot of times series finales before that was kind of like, oh, we're in the middle of a season and maybe we've gotten a hint that we're ending and maybe we have it. So let's just wrap this thing up however we can. And a lot of times shows just didn't even know it was coming. So the series finale was just a regular old episode. I think there's a strong benefit to knowing that it's coming and knowing that you can plan something, even if it's only half a season before. Like for me, we're going to get into some of the series finales we think are the best and some that we think are the worst and so on. But even before Lost and before the era of knowing when your show is going to end, I think my favorite series finale before that was Roswell, which was a show that kind of unceremoniously got told in the middle of season 3. You know, the show kind of had its ups and downs at that point, but they got told they were going to end and they wrapped it up and they did a phenomenal job because they knew the end was coming.
I feel like the WB, now the CW, has always been really good about that. Mm-hmm. Even before it was like now everybody does it. Now everyone says, okay, we're going to do a final 13 or whatever. But I feel like even back before Lost kind of made it the popular thing to do. It wasn't quite so much of a big thing because none of those shows were being watched by enough people, but it was definitely something that they were better. They've always been better at than most networks, I think, because they're not drawing enough eyeballs for it to matter, probably.
Yeah, no, that's right. And I think another thing that might play into it is that, I mean, the CW and the WB before it kind of had sort of genre shows, and genre shows are really dependent obviously on plot and character, meaning they're not 20 minute disposable sitcoms that can just, you know, end and no one will really miss them. And those shows really usually were building up to something. Whether they got to it or not was another thing, but I think that genre shows definitely were the, you know, the leaders, the first shows to try
do
this.
And it's to the CW's credit that they can recognize that that's what their market is and that's where their fans are coming from and be like, I bet we're going to piss people off if we just chop this off 3/4 the way through the story.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I mean, it has paid off. There's Supernatural. I mean, Supernatural has been going for 10 years.
That show's going to be going on until the Earth comes to an end, I'm convinced.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, technically, they've already written one series finale before, you know?
Did they? I didn't even know that.
The season 5 finale was meant to function as a series finale. But the CW said, you ain't ending. This is too much of a cash cow. So they kept it going.
That's so funny. I didn't know that.
Yep.
Yeah. And another thing that definitely plays into it is obviously that technology that has evolved. We went from, you know, not even knowing when a series finale was coming to, you know, getting a couple of years notice when a show is ending. And also the way people watch, obviously, there are people that say, I'm not going to watch that show until it's all on Netflix or previously all on DVD. Which, I mean, it sucks, obviously, for the people that are broadcasting that because they don't get any ratings. And by not watching it, you're not sure you're actually going to see the end. Right. But it's such a different way of watching TV that, I mean, it literally did not exist 10 or 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it changes a lot of times the way things play. Because I know, like, for instance, Buffy season 4, 5, which was Dawn's first season. Season 5, right?
Yeah, season 5.
I watched Buffy a decade and a half after it aired. And I think having those block of episodes when Dawn got introduced made it play completely differently than if it was kind of drips and drabs over weeks at a time. Because that's my favorite season of the show. And it's not by a small margin. And I didn't mind that storyline at all. Whereas my best friend who watched it when it aired was like, as when she found out that's where I was, she was like, oh my God, this thing's going to happen. It's the worst. And it's so interesting to see how, you know, being able to watch 4 episodes in a block so you don't have to wait in between and you can't really think too hard about it changes the way you view a thing.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And it's also really interesting now that you mentioned Buffy season 5. We can segue into our best series finale from here. But Buffy season 5 was kind of written like a series finale.
Yep.
Yeah, even though Joss has said that he always expected it to be picked up somehow, the whole thing was building up to something. But I'm wondering, what was your take when you were watching that after it aired? Because the show felt like it was building to a series finale, but you knew you had 2 more seasons left.
I did, and it was actually... Right? I felt weird about it, because I hit the end of season 5 and was like, that feels like the perfect ending. What on earth could they possibly do for 2 more seasons? I'm like looking at, you know, a list of another 30 something episodes or whatever that I have to watch and going, how is that going to work? You know, like, so yeah, it's really, I think that also changes quite a bit to know, like, whereas, you know, in the moment everyone was like, oh my God, this could be it. I knew like, okay, well they're going to kill her, but there's, you know, another 20 episodes to come, so something crazy is going to happen.
Yeah, and this might be a good moment to say that there's definitely going to be spoilers about the last episodes of a lot of shows. Yeah, just a little bit. I mean, it's impossible to avoid when talking about... I know. And again, there's 2 more seasons of the show. But if you care or if you're worried about any spoilers, please check the time codes on the episodes. I'm definitely going to write, when are we talking about each show? So if you want to skip a section, please feel free. But before we get into actual discussion of series finales, I would like to know if you guys have any favorite tropes or any favorite things that can only happen on series finales. If you don't mind, I'll start. What do you guys think?
Go for it.
I definitely like, and I like this in my shows and movies. I really like that. I think that the best example is literally on the 3rd Lord of the Rings movie, which is a unexpected cavalry. You know, when a cavalry comes here, when you think you're done and you're almost done, a last cavalry charge of, you know, people you might have not seen in, you know, a couple of seasons, but you get that last big push. I'll definitely have to pull out an example. The last season of Stargate Atlantis, a show I kind of enjoyed. I mean, it wasn't that big a show, but it was enjoyable. Had its last episode with, you know, a lot of spaceships and a lot of battles and stuff like that. They're just threw everything in there because they could, because they're not going to come back. And that Can it be a literal cavalry or spaceship charge? Or, you know, just characters coming back after a couple of years and giving you one last look at who they were and what they were.
Yeah. I don't know that this is necessarily specific to series finales, especially since we've talked about Lost quite a bit. But
right.
I'm a little bit of a sucker for a flash forward, like an epilogue kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
which you see a lot. And oh, I'm yeah. specifically thinking of Scrubs. Which
yes.
it's season 8 finale, because as far as I'm concerned, season 9 doesn't exist, because that was crap. But
yes.
I love that season 8 finale, and it does two things I really love in finales, and that's it's got the little epilogue thing of, you know, everybody in the future and where they all end up, and they also did the bringing back of every random character you could possibly mm-hmm. think of just for fun without it seeming ridiculous. So right. those are two things that I tend to like.
I would say, I'm not sure if it's necessarily a trope, but it's something that is in common with a few of my favorite finales. Like, I think Parks does it a little bit, but Roswell and both Roswell and the show Greek did this as well, where, you know, the finale largely ends with everyone is now leaving to go to their separate lives and go to yeah. different cities or different locations, hence why the show is ending, mm-hmm. because yeah. they will no longer be in the same location. I think that's yeah. kind of, you know, it feels like it makes sense, because how would the show continue? I always get a little frustrated when it's like, oh, and now they're all graduating and leaving town. It's like, well, how is there supposed to be another season? I don't get it. I also just like mm-hmm. parallels, which we will also get into later. I really enjoy yes. when the last episode parallels the first episode of the show ever.
Mm-hmm. Buffy is my favorite one that does that. They literally have like almost, you can put the two frames side by side of them in the high school in the first episode and in the last episode. Yeah. And I love, yes. love that.
We'll get into it, but both yes. Lost and Chuck did this and it ruined me. So
I will also say yeah. Parks and Rec is another one that did the flash forwards. That was wonderful.
It was. I was going to point that out when we got to Parks. Yep. They yes. did do
Since
that.
That
and
out.
The second, well, I'll talk about it when we get there.
I was going to say,
we'll get there.
We'll get there in a second. Yeah. yeah. So it's good with whatever device, whether flash forwards or, you know, parallels to the first episode are actually thematically appropriate and not just, you know, a device to, you know, I don't know. I don't know if I'm expressing myself correctly, but I like when it actually ties to what the show is about
right.
and not just a device to tell a lot of story in one episode or something.
Yeah, for sure.
Let's move on into what we think are the best series finales. Again, this is all subjective. We can disagree and we will disagree. but first, let's start nicely with some common ground. Sarah, would you like to start us off with one of them?
Sure. I don't know that Laura's seen this one, but
no, but that's okay. Again, I already know most everything about
say you've
shows
heard all of it,
that
but
everyone cares
Angel
about.
Angel may be my favorite series finale ever. It's certainly
oh wow, that's
certainly
that's a big
like
deal.
Top three. Yeah, I love the last episode of that series. I love everything about it. There's something about like we were talking about tying themes together, and that whole show. Mm-hmm. was just about how he was going to keep on fighting the good fight no matter what. So the idea of yes. it ending with that last shot of the battered and bruised and almost dead of some of them and, you know, Angel mm-hmm. getting ready to fight this giant dragon and it just cutting to black and letting you imagine that this is just what he's going to do for all eternity, I think is the perfect way right. to end that show.
Yeah, yeah, I definitely agree. Just to set it up a little bit more, the last episode of Angel pretty much ended with Angel saying, screw it to all. I mean, Angel was really about institutions and how they can oppress you and how you have to fight, how it's easy as individuals to be, you know, corrupted by power.
For
and,
sure.
you know, the whole vampire thing, it's pretty much that. But like you said, the final episode ended with Angel saying, screw that, I'm going to still fight it even though I know it might be a losing battle. And it ended with this amazing shot of an army of monsters and demons and a dragon bearing down on them in a dark, rainy alley.
Basically
yeah,
hell on
Earth. It's pretty much a perfect shot.
Yeah.
Basically hell on Earth. Yes.
It's just like that final shot has stuck with me forever. Yeah, that's great.
So good. So good. And let's not forget it had other series finales tropes, like main characters dying
mm-hmm.
and
oh,
big changes to the status
heart.
Quo. I've seen that finale twice. There's a specific moment where our character dies and is asked, and asks to be lied to in his final moments, because a lie is better than the truth, and it's just so heartbreaking.
It hurts my heart even thinking about it. I love kind of the way they tie up all the individual character stories, one of them being with that death we were just talking about, but like kind of letting Spike go off and have his Spike moment before things go to shit, and that kind of thing. I kind of love the idea of like they're all warned, like, basically I'm gonna end the world tomorrow, and they get to go off and do what you'd expect them to do for their last day on Earth, and then come back together and deal with the end of the world. And I think it's really well done.
Yes, which is again another nod to, you know, the series finale that end with characters doing what they normally do, which, for example, Parks and Rec did. If you ignore the flashbacks, but I mean, it had a mixture of both.
Yeah,
I would definitely agree with you. And it also kind of ended, because the odd thing about Angel and Buffy is that Angel ran a season longer than Buffy. Yep. So that kind of was the finale too of the whole Buffyverse. I mean, that was the last live action component of that universe. So it had to, you know, it had a lot of balls in the air.
Yeah, that not an enviable task to have to wrap that show up. And especially since they didn't necessarily know. I mean, I think by the time they were writing the last three episodes, they knew, but they didn't get to plan it a full season ahead.
Oh, yeah.
It was like a mid-season decision. They had contract disputes, and Joss was like, I need this, this, and this. And the WB was like, nope, sorry, bye. And suddenly they had to like speed up their timeline to get to the end they wanted to get to. So I can't even imagine what that writer's room must have been like.
So let's move on to the show we mentioned before, Parks and Recreation. I do think that this is one of the best series finale in recent history. Again, I think we all love Parks and Recreation, and we're not...
We have not
even
been
remotely
shy about
objecting
that.
About that.
No, no. I'm never shy about that.
Laura, why do you think that finale worked so well?
Well, to tangent momentarily, y'all were talking about how, you know, if Buffy had ended in season five, that finale would have worked great. Well, Parks is a show that essentially wrote a series finale every year starting from season three.
That's very true.
every single finale, if not sometimes mid-season episodes, were meant to function if the show was not renewed. And every year, I remember thinking after the finale would air, I was like, oh my gosh, how can they get better than that? And I especially remember after the season five finale, my husband saying that, why are they continuing? That was perfect. And season five's finale was essentially perfect. It had the tropes we were talking about in terms of, you know, flashing to the future, which of course they essentially carried over to the next season. I would argue, oh gosh, I mean, well, let's be real. It's hard to be objective sometimes when you love all of the characters on the show.
It's so true.
So much. So when you walk into this final episode, you know it's the last time you're going to see them. It's really hard to not love pretty much everything about it. But similarly, you know, Parks made sure that every single main character had a goodbye moment in the finale, had a special scene devoted to essentially what made them a character in their essence, you know. So like Jerry's final big moments were perfection for a buildup of seasons long torment. It was the most I remember saying as the series went along, you know, they're gonna have to have some really great, like, look at Jerry, he's the best moment. And it was perfect.
That's why his home life was so good, was so he of knew course why he well, didn't just go on a murder rampage.
Of course. But I'll never get over that finale. I mean, the second, because I agree with you, Sarah, I'm a sucker for like epilogues and showing where the characters go. And, you know, the whole season had already felt like that since they'd kind of jumped forward 3 years and showed Leslie and them in their new, even better office and all that. And the second we got that first jump forward with Donna, I started weeping because I knew what the finale was about to do. Uh-huh. And it killed me.
I got through until... I hung tough until Ron's, until she got Ron.
Oh,
the park. From then on, I was lost. And then when Anne showed up, I was a puddle on the floor. I was a mess.
I was screwed. The whole time I wept.
I think that's also a sign of a good finale. If, like, not that I'm like begging shows to make me cry. However, if I've A, been attached to your show enough that it means that much to me, and B, you're hitting all of those emotional notes such that you're moving me to tears, I think you're probably doing something right.
Yeah. And the finale definitely had even more of those callbacks, you know, the parallels to the beginning. I mean, their whole goal was to fix the swing at a park. Yep. It was the whole present day goal, if you think about it, of the finale, and it, the same exact actor who played a character in the show's original pilot was the one who was there. You know, they brought back a whole bunch of recurring characters. They brought back the library jokes, which are amazing. I will never forget Jean Ralphio and his sister walking away from the grave singing.
That's the best flash forward.
I still sing that song sometimes.
Oh my gosh. And I think that's something that was really unique about this finale too, is that in addition to your main cast, they gave flash forwards for some of the lesser Shauna. Side characters, like Shauna, like Jean Ralphio.
Oh yeah.
You know, people like that that weren't the focal point, but were beloved enough characters.
Or like Craig,
this world,
which was definitely like a late.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Or Craig.
Ah.
Which was perfect.
Oh, I love him.
Yeah.
Billy Eichner. She drove me here. Sorry.
Yeah. I definitely want to dispel the notion that we need to be objective about any of these. Because again, this is art. Art is subjective. Right. And that's the whole point of art. Like, there's no way to quantify any of these. So when we say we love a series finale or we hate a series finale, we're totally being subjective, and we know that. That's the whole point. So if you don't want to know the ending to Parks and Rec or an element of the finale, please feel free to skip ahead to the next time code. Because even though we're dealing with the big questions here, I really want to know Laura's and Sarah's opinion on a big finale question. So you shouldn't be listening now if you don't want to know this. So do you guys think that Ben or Leslie became president of the United States?
No, but which one, Sarah? Which one?
Lean Leslie. But you could ask me tomorrow and I might change my mind.
That's probably the one thing about the finale that I was mad about. If only because it had been such a running
thing.
Line of Leslie's that it does frustrate me a little, and by a little I mean a great deal, but I choose to ignore it most of the time, that they teased us like that. Well, that being said,
I think that's it frustrated me initially, and then I really thought about it, and either way, I love it.
Yeah.
And that's why I don't really commit to either one, because I think there's such good arguments for both of them. I think either one, were we to have a reunion movie in 10 years, would make a terrific story. So I'm just content to just be yes, absolutely. One of them is in the White House, and not think that any harder about it.
Yes.
Well, and my other thing is, I think it's Leslie. But I also think it could easily be that one of them is president, and then when the 8 years are up, the other one runs for president.
Right.
Because they both totally
get ourselves a Clinton situation. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yes. Yes. That's exactly my take.
Yeah.
I would like to believe that Leslie became first, and like Sarah just said, it became like a reverse Clinton situation. Leslie first and then Ben.
Yeah.
And definitely America would be better for it.
For sure.
Those two are great public servants.
They're both amazing.
But yeah, glad we all agree that Leslie definitely became president, whether she was president alone or Ben became president. Who knows?
Either way, Ben would be a great first lady or first man of the United States.
It's true.
Definitely.
Calzones
for everyone.
He can cook.
He can get some calzones done.
Yep.
Yes. Let's move on to another recent series finale, and that's Breaking Bad. Now, I have mixed opinions about the Breaking Bad finale. I liked it. I didn't love it.
Okay, now we're going to argue, but I loved it.
Okay,
I'll just leave y'all. I'll leave y'all be. You get into it.
I'm not saying it was a bad finale. Again, I did put it in the list of the best series finales because it was competent. It was adequate. It would not be on my list of top 10 Breaking Bad episodes.
That's probably fair. I'd be interested to see, I've been saying forever and who has the time, but I really want to rewatch the whole show. And I'd be interested to see how I felt about it on a rewatch and after some time has passed and not all caught up in the moment. Because I think
Of
sometimes
course.
things get colored by being caught up in the moment. But
Yes.
I think, as far as Walt is concerned, that is the only way it could have ended. Like, there,
Of course.
if he walks away from that finale, the whole series feels like bullshit. That the last moment of Jesse driving away in a car, like, broke my heart into lots of pieces in a good way. And the last scene with Walt and, oh my God, the wife, Anna Gunn, Skylar, was so, so beautifully done. Even just like those little three pieces were enough for me that I was just like, and you got your one last little heist with the Badger and Skinny Pete that was great, that kind of gave it its little fun twists. And so, like, I don't, it worked for me.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with everything you just said. The characters definitely had a fitting end, and I do think that the finale not being, again, it had a couple of elements I can nitpick, but I don't really care in the grand scheme of things. You know, once you put Walt against literal neo-Nazis, like, that's a little bit overboard for me.
No.
Like, you have to find the one element that's worse than Walt so you can kind of root for him. Not that the show wanted us to root for him, but, you know. No, I think you're right. All of those endings, I think the characters were definitely really well served by that finale, and was by definition a quieter finale, because the whole point, I think, of Breaking Bad was to show, even though many of its fans might not agree, was to show how pathetic Walt
Oh,
was at the end.
totally.
So the fact that the ending was a downturn, it fits. I think if you would have asked me before the finale what how did I think each character would end? I would probably say the way it did, which is not a knock.
No,
I
not at
mean,
all.
surprise can be overrated, no. But after, and again, I think I'm agreeing with you more than I'd like. But I just say that it's very hard to measure. It's very hard to measure because for me, the episode, two episodes before that, Ozymandias is pretty much one of the best hours of TV of all
Right,
time.
and I
And
almost think of that like a finale, and the last two episodes are
yes.
kind of like an epilogue, because that was really your climax of the show.
Yes, I would agree with you. Yes. While understanding, I agree completely with you, while understanding that those next two episodes were needed. I mean,
Absolutely. Like,
that
if it had just
downturn,
ended
that.
on Ozymandias, that would have been just like, I would still be weeping in the corner. Like, that would not have been okay. But it also operated as a finale in more ways than it didn't.
No, it definitely does. But it also did all the heavy lifting, so the last two episodes could deal with more introspective, really mostly focus on Walt stuff, which is fair. I think the finale is completely adequate. I wouldn't not say it's one of the completely best finales of all time. But if you take that finale as part of the whole, that was just an amazing whole. So I wouldn't knock the show for that finale.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so let's move on real quick to some a finale only you saw, Sarah, because I bailed early. But what are your thoughts on the Scrubs season 8
Well, I
finale?
mentioned it before as kind of like my example for the two tropes. But it just, the thing about Scrubs is that it was great for a couple years, and then it was less great for a while, and then it kind of perked back up the last season or so. And then that season 8 finale was just like such a perfect episode of Scrubs, in my opinion, because they do the humor. They often did like the really, like, that show, I think, was really groundbreaking in the way it mixed comedy and drama in a way that most shows prior to that were not willing to. And they did a lot of that in the finale. And then they had this wonderful, like I said, I'm a sucker for an epilogue, and they had this wonderful little epilogue at the end with all of the characters in the future. And, you know, JD and Elliot are married, and Turk and Carla have all these kids, and their kids are friends. And, like, it was just, it hit me right in all of the right soft spots.
And I think that's another trope, and we'll get to that in a couple of when we mention another show. But there's an uptick in quality when they know it's the end.
For
Not that
sure.
they were slacking beforehand, but it's kind of like everyone, the cast, the writers, the producing, even the like everyone gets energized when they know this is the
I
end,
also
that the
think
finish line
it
is
helps
near.
creatively, Because when you're in the fifth season of something and you have no idea how long you have to make these stories last,
right.
you by definition have to stall.
Yes.
And then once you know, okay, I only have to fill 18 more episodes of story, you can say, this is where we want to end. Let's fill in the middle. And it's going to do better story-wise than if you're just spinning tires trying to make the thing last longer.
So let me move on to The Wire. Now, The Wire is hailed as one of the best shows of all time by a lot of people.
I would agree.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's for me. It could be the best, not my favorite. Which, as
we've talked about that before, and I would agree. It's certainly not among my, it's too heavy to be among my favorites. It hurts too much.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, but this is definitely another that literally ends on the parallels between the first season and the last season. And it, I think it does pay off the theme of the whole show. I mean, it the ending of this show, there's no way you leave happy watching The Wire. Doesn't mean it's bad, but you leave with that feeling of despair that is, I mean,
that's what it's best at. That show was kind of the best at making you, like, feel despair.
Yeah. And it's a tough line. I mean, if you're doing it on purpose, I mean, unlike How I Met Your Mother, which you might end, you know, in despair.
That also
but
gave
for
me
other
despair,
reasons.
But that was a very different kind of despair.
Yes. Yeah. But like I say, it's a very tough line to be on.
Yeah, for sure.
Building your last episode knowing that you're, audience will suffer through it because of its content.
Right.
But do you have any particular moments from that last episode that you'd like to point out?
Well, the one that
really
sticks with me and still haunts me is, I was going to say, my guess is it's probably going to be the same one, is Dookie asking Prez for money and then going and buying drugs, or presumably buying drugs. And you see that, like, as much as Prez fought for this kid and this kid fought for himself, he's just not going to make it, and he's going to end up, you know, falling into the same traps we saw throughout the five seasons of the series, and it just made me want to curl up in a ball and die. It was so sad.
Yeah, those kids. That's definitely a striking moment. And it's not the one I thought of. So
oh, there we go. I'm glad.
I went for the only moment in the whole finale that it's a happy one, which is on purpose. And it's such a simple shot, and I'm still all torn up every time I think about it. But such a simple shot of a static camera looking at Bubbles while he climbs up the stairs from the basement to his sisters.
I got goosebumps just thinking about it.
And it's so simple. Like, again, I love my spaceships and my magic and my, you know, all big endings. But such a simple shot of a man walking up the stairs. Yeah,
up the stairs,
me,
right? Like, you know, like,
it
said so much without having to say anything at all. And that was kind of the magic of that show in a lot of ways.
Yes. And it's playing off because The Wire, like many HBO shows, really is a slow burner of a show.
For sure.
I mean, it takes a while for you to get the brilliance of it. But that was a moment that had been playing. I mean, Bubbles hadn't been a major character for a while. He had appeared.
Yeah, he'd been around, again, but he hadn't had like a major storyline in like since like season 3.
Right. Yes, but to see him be one of the few people coming out.
Right. To go on the correct trajectory instead of the backwards trajectory that we saw from so many of the other characters.
Yes. Yeah, and after a long struggle and everything all that, I'm just saying that was the one moment I still remember from the finale.
That's fair. So you're a lot more optimistic than me. I went right for the downer.
Well, I wouldn't say I'm more optimistic. I'm saying that I'm grasping everything I can.
That's true.
Like, I'll get the gap. Yeah. To become optimistic, hopefully, at some point. Because I'm definitely more of a McNulty, which is not a good thing to be.
I was going to say, that's not a great thing to say about yourself.
No. But at least I know I am. I already have that self-awareness that McNulty eventually earned.
I was
going
to say, it
took
him a long time to get to that point.
It did. But let's have a big tunnel shift. I'm hopeful that our listeners will not get whiplash because we're moving from The Wire to 30 Rock.
We maybe should have done 30 Rock at the same time we did Parks and Rec and Scrubs.
Yeah, we might.
Just maybe.
We might have, but I'm glad we're ending this section of the B-series finale on a high note Because 30 Rock, I mean, it was on the bubble for a long while, but it got mm-hmm. 7 seasons.
Right, much yeah. like Parks and Rec, it also kind of, I think, existed for a while, just assuming every season when it ended that it was not going to come back. Although there, because of the nature of that show, I think mm-hmm. it was so much more about, like, not that it didn't have, I mean, all of the characters on 30 Rock are amazing, but I think the it had a little bit more of an overarching plot and theme with the business than necessarily, you know, Parks and Rec, people weren't going to care what happened mm-hmm. in the Parks Department. They were going to care what happened to Leslie. Whereas 30 Rock, right, yes, you care what happens to Liz, but also about, you know, the show and what happens in, you know, yeah. alternate universe NBC. Mm-hmm. but, and I think that was what was so great about the finale is that they did write by the girly show, which is the show within the show, and mm-hmm. having it end at the same time in a really terrific way, and did write by the yes. characters, Liz, Jack, Tracy, all yes. of them.
I don't know what the girly show is you're talking about. I only know TGS with Tracy Jordan. I mean, come on.
Yes. Of course, of course.
No, but you're completely right. Yeah, if the whole show was about the production of the thing, even though it was, you know, really crazy at times.
Yeah, exactly.
It definitely, I mean, it ended up, now I'm trying to remember how it actually played out, but didn't it end with the song from, and I'm going to mess this up because it's impossible not to, didn't it end with Jenna singing the song from the Rural Juror?
Yes, it did. Yes, yes,
which
it did.
Was, you know,
which is one of my favorite
amazing joke.
One of my favorite running gags yes. on that show.
Yep.
The Rural Juror.
it's just the worst title ever. It's amazing.
But I mean, really, the whole episode is just so we can find out that Kenneth is in fact immortal and running NBC, you know,
yes.
200 years from
eventually
now. Like, it could have been, like, as Sepinwall, Owen says in his reviews, mm-hmm. if I'd just gotten to see Kenneth running NBC in 100 years, de nu, like, I would have been yes. good. I didn't need anything yes. else.
Yes. I understand that reference, and I love that our listeners probably will too.
Yeah, I know, right?
This is a very, very in-joke, but yes, thank you, Sarah, for making that.
Not a problem.
Let's move on to worst series finales, in our opinion. I have very strong opinions on the How You Met Your Mother finale, and I think it's definitely contentious. Like, I know people who love that finale
They're
a lot.
Wrong.
Who?
Well, I'm actually, by people, I mean one friend, hey, Raul. Hope you're listening to this because I'm going to destroy your arguments.
Yep.
But let's talk about what the How I Met Your Mother finale did wrong.
Everything.
Again, yes.
And this is coming from someone who's literally only watched parts of the show whenever they're on in syndication and knew enough about the show that when she mm-hmm. saw most of the finale was like, what fresh hell is this? Like,
yeah, see, that's very damning. When someone that wasn't even super attached to the show thinks the finale is garbage, you've got a problem.
Even I yes. know what they did with those relationships was wrong.
Yeah, it was wrong.
Yes. I'll note before we get into this that all of this is coming from a place of love because we loved that show.
We did love that show.
I mean, we care about that show yes. enough to talk about it. And it was really, I mean, at its peak, it was really smart.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. I mean, still go back to some of the early seasons on Netflix periodically because there's a couple of episodes of that show that are some of my favorite funny things from TV ever.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah. And it's hard to, I mean, did it last, I'm trying to, I don't remember, did it last, what, eight seasons,
eight,
10 seasons?
Eight
I don't
or
remember.
Nine.
Eight. I mean, let's not forget that it started around 2004, 2005, maybe. Yeah. And it was the little show that could because mm-hmm. it definitely had low ratings for the first couple of seasons. It was maybe too brainy for CBS or too serialized for CBS at that point. And, I mean, it really was a great show, even if we forget about Barney's.
I was going to say, we're just going to delete the last season, like mm-hmm. with Scrubs.
Yes.
And then,
yeah, but the whole thing, I mean, it had been on a decline.
It. Yeah, I was
right,
going to say,
it had been on a decline for
that
a couple of seasons.
Either, so okay, yeah. That doesn't even
yeah,
necessarily work.
Here's the other thing, though, is that the main problem, I think, and again, as someone who's not watched it all, of course, there's plenty of yes. shows that go on declines and their last season mm-hmm. isn't great and they still have an amazing finale. And comedies especially right. could do that a lot of times. Mm-hmm. And the main problem is just that they totally stuck to their guns with what they had decided early on in the series run. And the problem is that your show can change.
Exactly. Sometimes shows outgrow your idea.
Yeah, your show can change, your characters can change, and when your characters change, your audience changes. And so the problem is that when your audience comes to feel a certain way, and you know they feel that way, and you go against all of that, let alone that the whole series has always been about meeting a mother, and then you introduce her, and you're like, oh, by the way, spoilers, guys, I'll give you a few seconds if you want to, like, pause this.
Don't worry
and,
about
like,
it. You're better off
walk away for a split second. So to introduce her and then literally reveal, like, moments later, it feels like, that, oh, guess what? She's actually dead now. And this is what really matters, is what happens right afterwards.
And Ted's going to go really, bang Aunt Robin.
That really kind of betrays what fans, A, were expecting, and then what they really were expecting once Barney and Robin became clearly the relationship that worked, you know? So it's just frustrating beyond all ends. So of course there are people who have edited together a version of the ending where it ends with him meeting the mother and that's it.
And that just stops. Yeah.
And
exactly.
That's
yes.
Perfect.
Yeah. It's
and
really
they
the last
screwed
like,
it all up.
3 minutes that are the most problematic, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The like jump to after he meets her, I think is the most problematic. But like the epilogue. Here's one case where that doesn't work. Because it is. Yes. It's that last couple of minutes that's really the problem. Like, I had a lot of issues with the last season being in the wedding and only the wedding.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm.
That it was too long. Yes. It was too many episodes to have to stay in the same place all the time. And they really had to stretch it. And then, especially to do all of that, and then 10 seconds after you leave, be like, oh, and now they're divorced. Why?
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Like, why?
It makes your audience...
just made us devote all of this time to this thing that you immediately ruined.
Yes. Like, you made us sit through weeks upon watching this one thing and then you undo it. Yeah, that's dumb.
Exactly. And it's funny because I actually, with the exception of maybe Victoria, found that Ted had the most chemistry with Robin all along. But they went out of their way in the very first episode of the show to have him say in the voiceover, that was your Aunt Robin, not that's your mother. So I feel like they lied from day one. We just didn't know it. And to then have it set up to be this elaborate twist. Like, maybe if it had only run 3 seasons, that might have been clever. But by the time you hit season 8 or 9, and you've seen everybody else develop other relationships and this thing with Barney and Robin has happened and all of that, it just feels like a betrayal of everything that happened before it.
Yes. I completely agree. And if you guys don't mind, I'm just going to run through a list of the things I did not like without delving into them.
Go
because,
for it.
Yeah, I'm going to get emotional. But I think that, I mean, I completely agree with you both about the structure of the last, you know, of the last season being, you know, taking place over a weekend. Did not work, but I do admire the audacity of trying to do that. Like, I admire the
different idea. They just didn't do it well.
Yes, exactly. Yes, it didn't work. But I can understand. I can admire the drive to try something like that. But it didn't work. But at least it gave us the, you know, the running gag of thank you, Linus, which I still use when someone refills my drink, like, a lot. In any case, I digress. You are completely right. I would say that, first of all, again, that whole season taking place over a weekend did not work. They made a point, even during that last season, of Ted letting go of Robin. Like, they had a whole episode, I mean, and Robin was supposed to be a balloon, and he let go of the balloon.
Yep.
Like,
yep.
They dedicated 20 minutes about how much Ted was over Robin, and then they pulled the rug back. It also, I mean, the show got broader in its comedy as, you know, as the ratings went on and the seasons piled on, which happens to a lot of shows. And it could still pull some great shows or some great surprises. Like, I believe it was around season 6 where Marshall's father died, and they had that whole countdown, and that was still a tear-jerking moment. And that was late in the show's run.
Yeah, they get points for cleverness throughout.
Yes.
They definitely tried stuff that I don't know a lot of other shows could do, but the problem with that is that if you're trying new things, you're not always guaranteed that they're going to be successful. And some like stuff like the countdown with Marshall's father really worked. That was great. But the everything in a weekend, kind of a swing and a miss.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. And then again, obviously, after that, the father still appeared in like flashbacks or stuff like that, or like hallucinations, and it kind of diminished that a little bit.
Especially that wonderful moment from Jason Segel, who was not told that was going to happen.
Yes.
That was the only take they did of that shot.
Yeah.
They got his genuine reaction. And then to like not stick with it and have the dad kind of still be around, so to speak, after that was kind of like, ugh.
Yes. Talking specifically about the mother, again, I said I was not going to get into this because I really did love that show. But specifically talking about the mother, it's one of the dangers of having such a premise-driven show. Like Laura mentioned, it's right there on the title. And like Sarah said, right from the first episode, you know that there's the Aunt Robin and it's going to be a while to get there. I'm okay with that. And again, I would be fine. I think I would have been fine if we never actually met the mother.
I probably would have preferred this is definitely
I mean, I would be fine seeing her, maybe not meeting her, but Christine Milioti did such a great job. Like, she
was
amazing. They
got damned by their casting,
as the mother.
Is what happened.
Yes.
Well, their
casting, she was just so
and the fact that in the few scenes we saw of them together, they made so much sense. It was like, oh, this really is finally the person that clearly is right for him. And then again, you go and you just undo it all.
Yes. I'll get to that. And you're completely right. But
I'm very passionate about a finale that I haven't even seen all of the show of. Just FYI, I really was mad about that finale.
Yeah.
I feel like everyone just universally has a lot of feelings about this episode.
Yes. And about the show, I mean, because it was a very emotional show, even though it was clever and it, you know, it wasn't the... I usually credit shows that are more cynical. When they have a heartwarming moment, I'm more open to that. The shows that are openly heartwarming all the time.
Yes.
And like we mentioned on this this podcast before, I mean, you're the worst. You're the worst as a... Yes.
The second you said the heartwarming moment on a cynical show, I was like, the tent for Gretchen.
Yes.
All the feels.
Anyway. I need to go rewatch that one. Sorry. I keep interrupting you, Diego. I apologize.
That's completely fine. This is a discussion, not a monologue. I'm so happy to have you both here tonight. But I'll just say that, you know, How I Met Your Mother was always really emotional. I mean, Ted was the ultimate romantic, and that was also bad at times because he could get stalkerish and clingy. And, you know, he thought he was a good guy, and I say that in quotes, you know, that bad definition of I'm a good guy. But, yeah, we met her, and she was great. And then in a span of 5 to 15 minutes, we lost her for no reason, and then he moved on. So I don't think time was played with really well. And the most important thing, and I think this is really important for any show, is that, like one of you mentioned earlier, is that it didn't account for the character changes throughout 8 to 9 years. And
show.
Yeah.
I mean, either make your point that people don't change and that Ted was still in love with the same person he saw 9 years ago or whatever. But don't build a whole season about him meeting someone, and don't build an episode around him letting go of that same person, because it didn't play out as well as they thought it would.
Yeah. And well, and even beyond Ted, like Barney, and I guess that's part of the point of Barney, but like they would periodically do these things to try and make it seem like Barney was like maturing and evolving past just being a bro. Right. And then every time they'd do it, they'd walk it back. Or like Robin started off as this like strong, independent woman. And by the end of it, it was like, why have you done this to Robin? This is not cool. I think the only characters they really stuck with the same characterization of all the way through were Lily and Marshall. And even that wasn't necessarily strong all the way through. There was just less all over the place.
Looking back at How I Met Your Mother, Barney wasn't really... I think the modern term to describe Barney would be problematic. I was young and dumber when I started seeing the show, so I didn't take into account. But the whole idea that he finally learned to respect and care about women, like, he only did that because he had a daughter.
Mm-hmm. It's hugely problematic. Yeah.
Sexism. Yeah. It's, yeah, problematic is a word. But the last thing I'll say about this is that what I like about TV, and I think we mentioned, I think I had this conversation with Laura a month ago when we went to a last concert, is that what I like about TV is that it can evolve and it can change and it's unforeseeable because you don't know either when inspiration would strike or which elements that are out of your control can affect the show. So the fact that they got married, I mean, it was really clever that the How You Met Your Mother creators shot something 9 years ago with the original cast, you know, with the original kids.
Because they weren't kids anymore by the time the show ended.
Exactly. The fact that they shot something, I admire that. If I were them, I would have shot like five different endings just in case.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then again, 2005, they probably thought they would last 13 episodes and just close it out and be like a great...
Right, exactly. They had no idea show. They'd so run for almost a decade.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But the fact that they, like, I would have loved if they had acknowledged the change that characters had gone through and just not use that footage. Maybe put it on the DVD. Like, we could have done this, but we didn't.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that they stuck to that and they said, what we shot 9 years ago is still valid, forgetting about all the character development and all whatever growth we have had just to make a nice callback or a nice... Easter egg of look, aren't we clever? We shot this 9 years ago. That really did rub off the wrong way to me.
Yeah, I mean,
like people who say that Lost should be planned, like they knock Lost for not having a plan all along. See, this is what happens when you have a plan and you stick to it. It could be a bad plan.
It's problematic either way. Mm-hmm. And I feel like particularly How I Met Your Mother, because so much of it ended up kind of hanging a lampshade on some of the ridiculousness. If they had had the kids that were now 9 years older and adults sitting there at the end, people would have laughed. Like, I would have thought that was hysterical. Yeah. And it would have been perfect. And then it gives them the... But they were so committed to their initial plan that they thought was hilarious. That, or thought was whatever. That, I don't know.
Battlestar Galactica proved controversial for reasons... For the same reasons another show did. And we'll get to that. But I really like the Battlestar Galactica finale. I'm not sure if you watched that.
No, I very much liked it. I didn't watch the show as it aired. I watched it later on and went and did my typical scouring the internet for opinions and reviews and things after I finished. And I didn't even know that it had been a thing when the finale aired. And after I'd watched it, I saw all of these mixed reviews and I was like, really? I don't understand why.
Yes.
Because I really liked it.
Yep.
Yes. I can definitely see why the last 2 or 3 minutes proved controversial, because it ended in a montage that's pretty much, it's very different to what had come before. But then again,
it's true.
What is it? All of this has happened before and all of this will happen again. Yep. So that was the whole point of the whole thing. But I think that a lot of people, either they pay lip service or they don't really buy into the shows that they don't buy spirituality on shows, so they're fine with it being some kind of like a through line. But if spirituality actually plays a role on the last episodes, they tend to turn against that. I think that they didn't think that the Battlestar Galactica finale would end on a spiritual note instead of a sci-fi spaceship kind of.
And I also think, and I assume you guys will agree with this, that me. And my guess is the average person that actually enjoyed that finale and some of the other ones we're going to talk about tend to watch for characters, not for crazy twists and plot points. But a lot of people are watching to have mysteries solved. And if they're not, they're pissed. And if that's what you're watching for, I get that. But I also, in my opinion, you're not watching it correctly. You're maybe not connecting with the proper things. You know what I mean? Like, I don't mean to judge anybody, but... I feel like if you can't appreciate the character moments, then you're kind of missing a whole level of a show that the creators are intending to be there and you're just not paying attention to.
Yeah, definitely. And I do think that finale is so focused on that final, 4 minutes, which are, again, I understand why people don't like them. I do like them, but it's such a departure from everything that came before. it literally deals with God and angels and divinity and stuff like that, which is, you know, for a sci-fi show, pretty much not
a stretch. But
it could be a stretch if it didn't play so well.
I was going to say, but if you'd been watching the whole show before, it shouldn't have been a surprise.
If you were away, if you were okay with visions and prophecies and stuff like that, and then you suddenly are not.
Yep.
I think they made a. And okay, I'm going to get into specifics here because it's impossible.
We're trying so hard.
Again, you can skip that. But the couple minutes involved with you finding out that the whole show was taking place in the past, and they flash forward to present day where you have two literal angels. Wow, I'm having trouble with that word today. Literal angels walking through Manhattan and just saying, look, humanity is always going to end up building robots and doing things and acting against their best interests. And they literally mentioned, like, well, I mean, that's how God made them or something to that effect. And the other character replies, you know, he doesn't like to be called that. I mean, I'm okay with it. Again, I'm not religious, and I'm completely okay with them calling God or not calling him God or whatever.
Right.
In the ending.
No, I'm with
you. And then it ended.
Like, I can absolutely, this one, I understand why people would have disliked it. Again, like I said, when I first watched it, I was like, but why? But like, now having time to kind of read some of the stuff and have some distance from it, like, I can see why people didn't like that. A lot more than I could with, say, the Lost finale, which I know we're going to get to.
Yes.
But I think the overt spirituality and the kind of like ripping the rug out from underneath you and being like, ha, you thought you were in the future and we're in the past. And like, I can understand how that wouldn't necessarily play with people.
Right. Yes. I agree with that. Yeah. And I think, and this is a theme that runs through all of these series finales, is that people usually, and I understand why, like, I have been like that at points, they're so focused on that, either that final episode tainting the whole journey, which I could understand if you don't like it. For example, the How I Met Your Mother doesn't necessarily taint the whole thing,
right. Mm-hmm.
But it plays a role.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand if you don't like it, how it can taint the whole thing. But even on the same episode, like, for example, the Battlestar Galactica finale had a big space battle with them attacking the final Cylon ships, and they all came down crushing to Earth, sort of. But it had such beautiful moments right there at the end with, I mean, the one that sticks with me the most is Gaius remembering that his father was a farmer, so he could be okay with all of that technology and without all of that, without all of the things his intellect had brought him. And I think a lot of people really got really focused on that final 5 minutes, without forgetting this was a 2-hour finale that paid off a lot of things with a lot of characters.
Yeah, like, there's a lot of hang up over just the very specific way it ended, and literally at, like, not just final episode ended, like, end of the episode ended, and it doesn't kind of take the whole thing into the big picture.
So let's move on to another show that I know all of us watch, and that's Chuck. Now, I brought this show up because, as I'll post in the description, Sarah had a video blog on series finale, and she shot that right after the Chuck finale aired, or around,
after I watched it. It was maybe 2 years after the show aired, I think. It wasn't
all right,
long.
Sorry, maybe a little bit after. But you weren't a fan of the Chuck finale. I'm sure you want to elaborate on that.
I was going to say, I wasn't. I didn't like a lot of the last season of Chuck, actually. But I just, there was something that rubbed me really wrong about erasing Sarah's memories and having, you know, this character that you've become attached to for all of this time end the show as a different person. That was a huge bummer for me. You know, we've talked so much about having great character moments and the stuff that we liked and seeing characters do things we hope they get to do going forward, or being set up so that you can kind of imagine them in their happy little lives in the future. And this kind of hit a reset button and then stopped the show. And like, I think that's an interesting technique if they knew they were going to have another year to like hit the reset, have her memories get cleared, and then kind of get to see them try and turn her back into the person they knew. But to end it on that note just kind of felt like a downer to me.
I kind of get that.
Yeah.
I think when it first aired, because this is a show whose final season, finale, et cetera, I haven't rewatched since it ended. I've re-seen some of the earlier episodes because season one and two are phenomenal.
Yes, they are.
The season two finale and a lot of other finales also being written to serve potentially series finales.
They were another perpetual on the bubble.
Yep. And the season two finale, I would argue, is probably in my top five season finales, finales of all kind ever. It's such a good episode. I have seen it way too many times. But I've also seen, of note, the Chuck pilot probably more times than I've seen any other TV episode. Because I just said episode. Wow. Episode. Because I love that episode so much. So I think the thing about the Chuck finale, because I totally agree with you, I was watching the final season, and I think it was literally an episode and a half. Like, it was not the final episode, and it wasn't the second to last episode, but it was the end of the third to last episode where they kind of erased Sarah's memories.
Yeah.
I remember totally not liking that direction. I was like, oh, great, we're doing the amnesia thing, going into the finale. Oh, that's so cheesy and blah, blah, blah. But that being said, I really liked how they used it to do the finale. Like I stated earlier in this podcast thing we are taping, I really like parallels. And the series finale of Chuck was like the pilot.
That's true.
But 5 years later.
Yeah.
And I about lost it. Because like they, you know, obviously a lot of it was trying to see if they could rejig her memories. But at the same time, the plot of the episode, which they didn't have the control over so much, literally paralleled so much of the first episode. But you still got, you know, it wasn't just the parallel there. It was an updated version, you know, like you still had Jeffster sing a song, which definitely did not happen in the first season. But they still had to defuse the bomb and all that. And, you know, when we talked about the Sopranos having ended in ambiguity and whatnot, I think the Chuck finale's ambiguity was a little more hopeful at the end. And I really appreciated, I think at the time I was a little bummed by the ambiguity. I was like, but I want the happy ending written in stone and blah, blah, blah. But let's be real, the tone of the show was always that, you know, I think that's also part of it is that, you know, obviously if they'd had a whole nother season to kind of try to work through getting Sarah back or getting Sarah back to who she was, I think the reality is the show's tone always implied that she would get back. Right. Like it would
it's
happen.
It's just not in keeping with that universe for something that
horrible to happen. And so I think in a way I can appreciate, most of the time I get annoyed when shows don't give me all of the character resolution I want. Like they hint that it happens after the show ends and I'm like, dude, I sat through 5 years of this show. Show it to me. I want to see them make out. You know, I want to see Leslie as president, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But I think in this rare situation, it both hurts more to not see 100% that Sarah gets her memories back. But also, you know, like, it's one of those, I firmly believe that they were always going to be together no matter what. So even if she lost her memories, they were always going to fall back in love regardless, you know? And so I really did like it. I cried a lot once again. So that's a large part of what I remember.
Did you guys both watch the show as it aired?
Yes.
Yes.
I wonder if
we also know each other because of that.
There you go.
Yes.
Same chart, season two. If the experience of watching it watching that story play out on a weekly basis worked better than me, who probably watched all of season three in a day and a half. You know what I mean?
I wonder
if it's the opposite of what I was talking about with Buffy before, in that this needed some space to breathe for it to really hit you right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I just, like I said, I don't know the answer. I just,
it's
just an interesting thing to to throw out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, again, we'll be getting to Lost in a minute or two, but I firmly believe that with Lost, it's easier to handle when you don't watch it all in a row, if you don't binge watch it, because you absolutely need the space in between to not only absorb the information that's been given to you, but to absorb the emotional impact of stuff.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, I agree.
Yes. Which, again, Which, again, coming back to what we were discussing at the beginning of the episode, the way we watch TV can also mm-hmm. obviously impact you emotionally. It's not the same to watch some characters grow over a period of, you know,
let's say
Chuck, was it 5 years? Yeah, 5 years versus 2 weeks. Yeah. You can still get it, but it's definitely different.
Mm-hmm. That's something that absolutely fascinates me, like how the experience of watching a thing changes when it's binge watching versus like on air. Mm-hmm. It completely fascinates me. But that's a whole other topic.
yeah, definitely. And it goes both ways. Like, I'm pretty sure that House of Cards, for example, week to week, it wouldn't work. We would have the time to process how bad it is.
Yeah, that's true. And I think, I know Mo Ryan, at the very least, and multiple other people, too, have said that, like, some of the Amazon and Netflix series, it's kind of like the death of the episode. Mm-hmm. Like, people aren't mm-hmm. writing with these shows like a unit that can stand alone on its own. It's just 60 minutes of a 13-hour movie.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which, you know, again, you can argue to death. That's not really what we're talking about, but really whether that's a good mm-hmm. thing or not. But I do think it affects how things get viewed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Diego, your feelings about the Chuck finale.
No, I think you both said it pretty well, even though you both, You might disagree on your feelings on it. I will say that for me, there's no way in hell that Sarah did not remember everything at the end. Because like you both said, that's not in the spirit of the show. Like,
yeah.
I do not picture that after that fade to black that we see. I do not picture her saying, that kiss didn't work. Goodbye, see you. Like,
there's just no way that happened.
There's
no
way
you're a nice guy, but bye.
Yeah. Yeah. So even though it's technically an ambiguous ending. Mm-hmm. For me, it really wasn't.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed that it was, quote-unquote, ambiguous. Because I don't think I would have liked it any better if it ended with her saying, oh, yeah, I remember you, Chuck, at Fade to Black.
Yeah.
It wasn't
very much enjoyed this.
The ambiguity of it. Because like we said, we clearly all agree that obviously they ended up together. I think it was more that when I know I'm getting to the end of something, I want to spend as much time with those characters as I can. So it bummed me out that she was not her anymore for those last couple episodes, and that kind of tainted the whole experience for me.
And
I think it's really what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
Yeah, and with How I Met Your Mother and other shows, like you mentioned, I mean, probably season 2 was the best Chuck season. Hard when it's so front-loaded like that. Again, How I Met Your Mother, its best season was probably seasons 2 and 3 of a 8-year show. And in Chuck, the best season was probably season 2 of a 5-year show.
Oh, it wasn't probably, so front... it was definitely, but you know, whatever.
Well, okay. I'm trying to play devil's advocate. I'm trying to be quote-unquote objective, even though I'm not. But it's hard to measure a show when it's so front-loaded on how good it was, because you still have, I mean, you'll remember more fresh, I mean, the bad years are more fresh in memory.
Yeah.
Fresher.
Definitely.
So it's weird. I mean, it's not that we didn't enjoy Chuck's season 3, 4, and 5. They had their moments.
Mm-hmm.
But it's tough to measure a series finale when, you know, the best years were 3 years ago. But yeah, that's, again, something we cannot measure or really discover why. It's just how we feel.
Mm-hmm.
But now let's move on to our final show of the evening, which is, I think it's definitely the what is it, the standard?
The most controversial finale.
Not among us three, it doesn't sound finale. Like.
Nope.
No, I think we all three are in agreement. So I'm going to start with that. I'm going to ask you, Laura, did you like the Lost finale?
Did I like it? Let me think. Yes. Yes.
Sarah, did you like the last
that
finale?
I did.
Good. And Diego, did you like the last finale? Yes, I did. And I think this is the moment where we lose every listener we have, maybe. Which is really good timing, but you'll see why in a bit.
Is this a good time for me to unintentionally insult every listener we had then by saying that if they didn't like it, they weren't paying enough attention?
Well, I already insulted them and told them they were watching it wrong, so you might as well.
That's
hop
true.
On board.
That's true. Yeah.
Because it's likely that no one's listening by now. After
true.
We said we all three liked it, they probably turned it off.
But the Lost finale for me is the perfect example of why binge watching certain shows is not a good idea. When after the season five finale with the big reveal about, you know, Jacob and the other dude on the beach. And I went back and decided I was going to rewatch the entire series before the last season. And I had already formed this big theory about who the Man in Black was and the smoke monster and so on and so forth. That, by the way, season six proved totally right. But as I was rewatching the series, my roommate decided she was going to rewatch it too, or not rewatch it. She was going to watch it for the first time. And so she decided to watch along with me. And of course that meant some days we watched four episodes in a row. And I learned very quickly that when you are new to Lost and you watch four episodes in a row, you have a really hard time keeping track of characters, keeping track of who's the eyeliner guy. Like, I don't even remember. She came up with this ridiculous, and again, I love her to death, but she came up with this ridiculous theory about Richard Alpert during season four. And I just looked at her and was like, you are so screwed when we get to the end, because you don't even remember basic details from season two.
I didn't jump in and start watching it as it aired until, I want to say, season four. I had friends, I was in college at the time. I had a friend in one of my classes that was like, you're going to like this. You're borrowing my season one and two DVDs over winter break and you're going to bring them back to me and you're going to watch the whole thing and you're going to be hooked. And I was like, okay. And I didn't really believe him. And then the next thing I knew, I did in like a week watch all of it. But like, I found myself then when I started watching it slowly being like, oh, I'm actually retaining some more of the stuff that's happening. Because it is, it's a lot. There's a lot happening in that show in not a lot of time if you're watching a season in 4 days.
Absolutely. And I think that's the thing is that a lot of people's reaction to the finale, like you mentioned earlier, Sarah, is that they were looking for answers and not necessarily character resolutions. Yeah. But the irony is, the large majority of the answers they were looking for were either answered or you were given enough hints that it was pretty obvious by that point.
Then you could at least have a pretty good gut feel for it.
Exactly. And there are, there are one or two big mysteries from early on in the series that never really got resolved. But let's be real. There are plenty other shows that also don't resolve every single storyline that they may have dropped earlier on in the show. And so my frustration has always been that people just got mad that they didn't answer enough. And I'm sitting here going, would you like me to tell you? Because I can literally show you evidence. Because after season five, I could literally show you, spoiler alert again to people who haven't seen it, I could literally give you evidence why the Locke who had been resurrected was the Man in Black who was the smoke monster, and literally the scenes from season two and season one and little things that were said back then that made it make sense. And so, and then it was literally answered in season six. And I was like, look, I did my homework. And the show gave you that, but it also didn't give it to you on a silver platter all the time. It expected you to pay attention and hoped that you were smart enough to get it. And that allowed them to focus on the characters, which was always the point of season one, to be perfectly honest. The majority of the season one episodes are about the characters and not about the island's mysteries. Totally. And so for the series finale to focus heavily on those character moments, at least with the whole Flash Sideways thing, which I mean, I could devote a whole episode to why the Flash Sideways, maybe wasn't executed perfectly, but for the finale was absolutely what they needed to do. And now I'm just getting sappy in my head. This last 10 minutes that everyone hates, that I adore.
I will mention, because this is the chance we have to mention this, that Laura and I were lucky enough to attend the Lost concert a month ago in LA. And Laura got to ask a question to Carl Cuse and Michael Giacchino, and she got very sappy then.
What?
Didn't you get to ask questions at Comic-Con too? You're very have good microphone. Yes.
It's Diego, as he can tell you.
I will admit of being the one prodding her twice.
He also goes like this. He raises his hand and starts waving it violently as soon as someone looks in our direction and then just points at me.
Yes. And it worked twice.
And
so,
it did work twice.
It's proven.
So really,
it's just that Diego's a good wingman.
Yes.
But I'll say, I mean, you said you were very really sappy about that, and because the show really does mean something to us all these years later. And I will agree with everything you just said. And I'll say that sure, they gave us answers. Some of the answers were crappy. Like, I did not like the Whispers answer, even though it makes sense.
Yeah.
I did not like the execution. I did not like the actual answer, even though it made sense. But I agree with your... I mean, I understand people who said that the writers promise answers. But that's part of the game every show plays. Like, right now, every show that's playing has an article with Michael Aselli the next day with the creator teasing answers to the, like, it's just part of the game.
Yeah.
And like,
I mean, even
before,
Survivor does it. And that's a reality TV show.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. And I also see why they needed to say that they were planning the show. Like, they had the plan all along.
And that's another thing every show does now. Every show has a 7-year plan. Yeah.
Like, yes, and then they get canceled like 3 episodes
in
because
it's like,
on NBC or
maybe
something.
Maybe hold off on the 7-year plan until you get through a year first.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, which is pretty much what Lost did. They thought they were getting 13 episodes, so they started writing for 13 episodes,
right, exactly.
And then they had a big premiere.
Man, once you know you're going to last for a long time, then start creating a big, mm-hmm. big plan.
Yes,
but anyway,
yes, yeah, I completely agree with you both that obviously focusing on character. The people who focus on character obviously had a more satisfactory ending to Lost than the people who focus on plot.
For sure.
And I understand that. I mean, if you focus on plot, I'm not saying you're completely wrong. I'm just saying that maybe the show wasn't as interested in it as you were.
Right.
Which happens.
And I mean,
there's a lot of shows that,
Damon Lindelof and Carlton Cleves will even say as much, that they were never interested in the more sci-fi, not that they weren't interested in the sci-fi aspects of it, but that was never the focus for them. That was just the delivery method for them to tell some really good stories about people.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. And we mentioned before, all of those shows that came after that focused on plot and other people, they all failed with a couple of seasons. I mean, mm-hmm. we got The Event, we got Flash Forward,
I will point out that I think Timeless is one that's finally gotten it right. We were talking about new shows this year, because every year NBC has a new sci-fi tinged series and it sinks after a week because it's not good. And I don't think anybody's watching Timeless because people have caught on that that's the thing that happens. However, it's a premise that it's not terrific, but the three leads are so good that I want to watch it every week. And I'm like, hey, look, what a concept. Sure, do sci-fi, but create real people in it.
Yeah.
Don't create the sci-fi world and then insert whoever into it.
Right, yeah.
For whatever that's worth.
Yeah. And I'll also add, I mean, not that, you know, that everyone knows about this, but the pedigree that show has, I mean, it's co-written and co-created with Eric Kripke from Supernatural, which, as we've seen, he knows his way around, you know, 5 seasons worth of plot.
And Sean Ryan.
And, what is it? Sean Ryan Harsh. From The Shield and Terriers. And, yeah, so, I mean, even if you see the first 3 episodes and you think that this is kind of cheesy at times, but the characters are really strong. If you know that you have these 2 great producers, these 2 great writers,
I mean, leeway.
Exactly.
For sure.
Yes.
But anyway.
And I'll add my last big pet peeve. I mean, I have a lot of pet peeves about Lost, and we could do a whole episode about the Lost finale. And we'll get to Sarah's thoughts, specific thoughts on the Lost finale in a second.
I think I know what you're about to say. Say it.
I mean, you might. I don't know.
Your pet peeve. I'm ready.
My pet peeve is people saying that, look, I agree, having a big fountain of light in the middle of the mountain that you can plug in and out, it sounds
ridiculous,
really dumb.
Yeah.
it does. But then again, like, the show got away
this
with a lot.
This is an island
by
with
just
polar bears, though, like,
and a smoke monster.
Yeah, no. Right. No, but exactly, like, it got away with a lot by saying electromagnetism and waving their hands around.
Oh yeah,
so why is there
right.
this
definitely
thing in the electromagnet? It doesn't, like, electromagnetism doesn't work like that.
No.
But the fact that it's a scientific term, like, made people think that, hey, it's likely.
Yeah.
So what if you could only access the Iceland from a specific coordinate? Electromagnetism. Okay, sure, let's go. But it at the end of the day, a light in the middle of the Iceland and electromagnetism were used the same way. Like, it's not. It's all hand waving from the writers.
Yeah.
Sure, one is more egregious at time, but again, freaking smoke monster ponders for time travel. Like, I'm okay with time travel, which has no scientific fact, but if there's
and
a
it
light
also
coming
tends
out
to
of
be a lot of time around, waving or hand waving,
of course,
in order to make all of the paradoxes go away.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I understand that it's dumb in context, but I mean, everything is dumb in context if you really think about it, which you shouldn't. The important thing was the emotional truth in a moment. It doesn't matter that Jack was plugging in a cork in the Iceland. What matters is that he thought he was going to die. He saved Desmond and he went through with it because, I mean, that's the important thing. And it's something I also think about Harry Potter. I mean, the Harry Potter, the epilogue sucks. You might think that I don't completely agree. But that wasn't the important part. The important part was him sacrificing himself, thinking he was going to die.
Yep.
And I think it's pretty much the same with Jack. Yeah. Doesn't matter how you do it, the emotional truth of the character was really there.
Yeah.
That's my pet peeve.
And I think, just to build on that, because we were talking about the Battlestar Galactica going spiritual at the end, but that there were hints of it before. I think a lot of what throws people off about the light in the island and all that is that they always expected a sci-fi explanation to everything on the island,
right.
Ignoring the fact that a lot of the details, a lot of the mysteries on the island were a little bit more supernatural-y, which leans towards spiritual. So when all of a sudden in season six with Jacob and the whole, like, who's the protector of the island and the flesh sideways suddenly seeming like the afterlife, they were like, whoa, hold up.
This is not what I signed up for.
Yeah, yeah. They're like, where's my sci-fi answer? Why is this all spiritual? Because it's just like they expected it to go pure sci-fi. When really the supernaturally spiritual side of things still fits in a sci-fi world. You know, it's just different. And again, I like that the finale, even in the last 10 minutes with all the little hints with the church and whatnot, they didn't even specify like one spiritual thing. It was like, this is just, you know, it's a mishmash.
Yeah.
And I thought it worked beautifully, considering the island was obviously this weird as hell place. So
yeah.
Yes.
Anyway,
yeah,
I love it.
I think, to chime in finally, I agree with both of you, but I think part of the problem is that ABC felt the need to add that little tag on the end with the crash on the beach that changed the context of everything a significant amount. And
well, it changed the context for people who weren't as obsessed with the show.
Yes,
right, exactly. Yes. Like
who knew all that footage was from season
obsessed.
One?
Obsessed, exactly. Yeah. Knew, but anybody that had binged watched the entire show leading up to the
of
final
course.
Season,
yeah.
which you know a lot of people did, and just saw that might not have necessarily made the connection, and then everybody immediately jumped to, oh, they've been dead the whole time, which is what everybody was hoping it wasn't going to be all along, and it turned into it kind of like spiraled from there.
Yeah, and that's probably my pet peeve is that it was obvious to me from the lack of music after the end of the moving on track from the score. It was obvious that after the music stopped and the credits were rolling and it faded back from black into the shots of the plane on the beach. To me, that was obvious. And you could hear the waves. I remember that vividly because I was still crying and leaving a movie theater with hundreds of other people who had just watched it. And I still hadn't fully digested what I'd seen. And I just remember watching the images knowing that it was just meant to be a tonal thing. You know, it was just meant to continue the tone of it's over, it's calm now, you know, like the characters are at peace or whatever.
Right.
And again, like the last 10 minutes were highlighting this was theoretically the most important time in these characters' lives. So what better way to, you know, leave the show off than to show where it started, you know? So I get it, but it drives me nuts when Jack asked his dad, his dead spiritual dad in the last 10 minutes, like, oh wait, they're all dead? And he was like, some of them died long after you. Pay attention, people.
Right, exactly.
We're seeing Jack die on the island right now. So if his dad says people died after you, that means they weren't all dead, damn it. I'm okay.
Yes, you are.
But yeah.
Yeah,
this is my favorite show ever, guys.
Yeah. I definitely do appreciate, like, I understand that, and I really do hope, I don't have the season DVDs, but I really do hope that footage of the, the wreckage of the plane isn't there.
I don't know.
I wonder if it's on Netflix as well. I hope it's not.
I hope it's not, too, it never occurred to me. I wonder if that's on the end of the finale.
Well, unfortunately, I do know at one point Netflix was missing, like, 10 minutes of the finale because they had
the
cut-for-TV
edition.
Yeah.
And everyone was pissed.
Yes. But what I was getting at is that I rather have, like, I understand how it can be confusing, mm-hmm. but I definitely rather have that confusion for some people. Again, I wasn't confused and neither were you. But I'd rather have that confusion than whatever, you know, networks are doing right now, where they run the credits over the last scene.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
they or right after the last scene, they run credits and then, like,
at like
squish down credits.
I was going to say squish down to a third of the screen and running it 400 seconds or 400 words a second. This is like,
yes. yeah.
So nobody can see.
And a promo, yeah, and a promo for the next thing. Like, you really after some finales and especially yeah, like, us, you really need
yeah.
to.
Yeah, you're the worst. Like, does that every week?
Yeah, like I definitely
FXX
would have
bumps down the credits to the bottom third of the screen yes. and runs them at quadruple speed while they're playing the promo for the next episode.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. But I can understand that. And like you all mentioned, I mean, the biggest pet peeve then I would think it definitely is people who think they were dead the whole time. Yeah. Which, if you haven't watched the show and you've heard that, sure. I mean, I would say watch the show and figure out for yourself. But the people who did, and I very clearly remember a couple of years back, George R.R. Martin, writer of Game of Thrones, of the Game of Thrones book series, he wrote a post about endings, and he mentioned, I didn't like the last ending because they were dead the whole time. And I'm like, you're a writer of this hugely complicated thing. And if you think
his stuff has like 700 characters in it, that's why I gave up.
Exactly.
I couldn't keep track. It was too much for my brain.
Right. And if he thought, like, he's such an accomplished storyteller because he's, I mean, hopefully he's so accomplished he'll finish the book soon. But in any case, if he's such a smart dude, because he is, if he didn't know that they weren't dead the whole time,
yeah,
and his job is to write stories.
Yeah. That clearly something is not being done correctly.
yeah.
Yes. And I would say on his end, not on the last creator's end. But again, we definitely could discuss this forever.
Of course.
And we probably will. Until the day we die, we'll die on this hill. Literally.
There you go.
So now let's move on to our Pick TV trophies. Every podcast, we give kudos to a moment, an actor, a writer, an episode, anything TV related that has happened since our last show. So to kick us off, Laura, what are you giving your Pick TV trophy to?
I'm going to give mine to, I think, something I've probably given it to before, let's be real. But I'm going to give mine to Crazy Ex-Girlfriend for continuing to impress me. I really was a little concerned. I hadn't really expressed this, but I was a little concerned about the direction the show would go in season two. What with, spoiler alert, her having theoretically reached her goal at the end of season one. And that was the whole point. If she's no longer the crazy ex-girlfriend, how's the show going to progress? Like, what's her goal going to be now? And sure, we maybe don't necessarily have a specific goal in mind for Rebecca, other than potentially convincing Josh to be with her forever. I thought the show still did a really great job. You know, every season premiere is kind of like reintroducing characters. And, you know, they've set up a good story arc for Paula, I think. And you know, Rebecca's back to her usual craziness, but I think we've even got a kind of good storyline in line for Josh, and we've got a good storyline in line for Greg, and yet we still get the really ridiculous songs. The wonderful musical numbers that I get stuck in my head for the next 4 hours. That being said, I will be incredibly sad to no longer hear their season one theme song on a weekly basis. I really enjoyed the closing gag about the girl in Rebecca's new open confronting her about, what's this for? And she's like, it's just for in my head, you know, like thinking about how I'm so in love and blah, blah, blah. And this girl's like, wait, how are we in your head? I'm right here. Oh no, you're not real. Poof. Like, I thought that was hilariously done.
It was.
But I will still miss the open song that gets stuck in my head, even when I'm not watching the show.
Yeah, it definitely went very mad on that premiere. I particularly loved that moment you mentioned, and that moment in the middle of a video when she said, like, we spent all of our budget in this song. Daryl is now played by a broom, and they cut to a shot of Daryl, a broom with eyes, with googly
eyes.
She's
like, literally every penny.
Oh, I really need to watch this show.
It's so good.
You really do. Yeah.
So that's my Pink TV trophy.
Good. So, Sarah, you're first Pick TV trophy in a while, so this is a really big one. So what are
and
you doing?
I tipped my hand earlier, but I am giving it to FX's Better Things and Pamela Adlon. because I am super crazy obsessed with this show. It's basic. I don't know if either of you are watching it, but it's basically Louis just with a woman instead of Louis. But she's
yeah.
a single mother of three, and it kind of focuses on her life as an actress, you know, an actress trying to live that life, keep her kids in line, and kind of just exist without going crazy.
Right.
And in particular, there was one episode 2 weeks ago where her eldest daughter kind of had the, she's, I think, supposed to be 17. And she had kind of mm-hmm. that moment that I think we all have when we're like, oh God, what am I going to do with my life? I am such a screw up. How did I get here?
Oh, yeah.
Oh my God. And they had this really real scene with this poor like 17-year-old girl having this breakdown while like mm-hmm. there were a bunch of adults over the house just having fun. And they all, instead of talking down to her or patronizing her, were super real with her. They were just like, hey, we're all faking it. Like nobody has any idea. Yeah. And it was just, it was such a beautifully written episode and I am so on board and I hope, I haven't heard anything about FX picking up more, but I think it's a wonderful thing to exist. I think there's not enough out there mm-hmm. that kind of focuses on that particular demographic, like in a woman who's beyond the age of 30 mm-hmm. to be specific. And I just, I love it a lot. So that's my trophy.
Yeah, that's a pretty good one because both Better Things and Atlanta, I'm not sure if you're watching it, but both are shows that FX is really pushing right now. Yeah. And I hope that Better Things is safe because as long as we don't have any new Louis.
Right, exactly. It's kind of definitely filling the Louis-shaped hole in my heart.
Exactly. In its own way. I'm not trying to make it sound lesser.
No, 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 of course not. But yeah, just like I've said the same thing about This Is Us and Parenthood, and they're not.
Right. Like
they have a lot of similarities. They're not the exact same show, but it's definitely filling kind of that the hole in my heart. So yeah. It's a high compliment.
Yes, definitely.
So what's yours, Diego?
So mine is not anything directly. It's nothing you can watch on TV, but I'm giving my Pick TV trophy to TV, the book by Alan Sepinwall and Matt Solersides. I referenced this book earlier. It's pretty much just a list of what they think are the top 100 shows. But obviously, I really do love their writing styles, both of them. And it's really an education for me. I mean, the top five I've obviously heard of. And I can disagree on the position of some of their shows because it's natural. I mean, they're not saying these are...
I was going to say, they even say as much in the intro, best. Which is all I've read of it so far.
Yes, yes. And the intro is pretty fun. It's just mm-hmm. them talking it out, like... How can we compare a comedy like The Simpsons to, let's say, Deadwood right. or The Sopranos?
Exactly.
And they came out with a quote-unquote mathematic way to figure this out.
I was
going to
say, I really enjoyed the rating system they came up with. I think it's as good as you're going to get to kind of being able to do it objectively with heavy air quotes that the people listening can actually see.
Yeah. Yeah, but again, it's a pretty good read. I mean, it's essays by either both of them or one of them. I particularly like the community one they did. I like that Buffy and Lost were right by each other on the ranking, mm-hmm. even though they were lower than I would personally have placed them, because again, we're different people. But what I like the most about this, and I would definitely recommend this book to all of our listeners, is, I mean, it's really an education. Like we mentioned before, we're really slanted towards, you know, mid-2000s, like yeah. mid-aughts, I don't like using aughts, mid-aughts to the present, because that's when we were growing up. But this book really takes a long view on television, and you learn a lot of things that, I definitely learned a lot of things that I wouldn't have otherwise.
Yeah.
Both, you know, groundbreaking shows, or shows that, they even have shows there that they said they're not the best, but they were the first to do something a specific way, or the first to mm-hmm. Introduce something new to television that we're still using today. So I definitely think this book is a must have for any TV, any fan of television. And again, we always have those days where we feel like there's nothing to watch and we're like, okay, so what should I start now? This book is a great primer.
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't have days like that. You still have too much to watch.
I have, well, yeah. I wish I didn't have days like that. I only have days like that right now.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that's part of trouble. I do have days like that, but I shouldn't have because there's a lot still to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would also say, if you enjoyed that, I don't know if you read Sepinwall's other book, The Revolution Was Televised.
Oh, of course.
Okay, yes. I was going to say, because if you haven't, then I will throw that out there as a recommendation too, as long as we're suggesting TV books, because I love the hell out of that book. It's so good.
That is a great book, and it's really nicely divided by shows. So I haven't read the full book.
I haven't read either. I read only the shows I watched or the shows I knew I had no intention of watching.
but that's definitely a fun book as well. Thanks, Art, for the recommendation. Yeah. So before we go, and if you read the description in this podcast episode, you know by now, but this is the last episode of the PeakTV podcast for the foreseeable future. We're waiting on Netflix. Netflix might give us an offer to come back at some point, maybe in 10 years. We'll try to manage the schedules and all of that. But for now, this is going to be it. And again, I think we kind of covered a couple of tropes of final episodes. First off, we obviously had the really welcome return of Sarah. So we had a character from before come back. I mean, a person, not a character. You're a person.
I could be a character. That's fine.
I'm not saying that. coming back for one last round. And we also did a 90-minute episode, which is, you know, long final episodes.
That's also a thing. For better or worse.
So this was on purpose, of course. Yes.
Totally.
We're just following the process of a series finale.
It's not that we just talked too much. We totally had this plan.
No, we totally did. We totally had this plan. Yeah. But yeah, we had a series finale about series finale with a lot of the tropes of a series finale. So I really do hope you all enjoyed the episode and you enjoyed the show. I would ask you to stay subscribed to the feed because we never know what might happen again. Netflix is doing something really interesting, so we might come back at some point. I mean, Gilmore Girls is apparently Will and Grace.
I heard that today. And that's So Raven today.
That's true. That's Raven.
Sorry, guys, we're doing our news at the end of the episode.
Now, those are just examples of that. We on this TV business, we never know what might happen. But for
everyone listening, I'm banging my head on the desk thinking about more reboots, just so you know. Like, I'm mentally banging my head on things because I just can't.
Yeah, the second someone's like, are they going to do a spinoff on Lost? I'm going to be like, no, please no.
No reboots.
As much as I loved it, I'm good with it the way it was. Let's not continue.
Anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, that's
completely. We don't talk too much.
Okay. Again, I want to thank everyone for listening. I want to thank Laura and Sarah for such great conversations over the past year. And I will say, I'm really proud that we did this, but we finally solved PeakTV. So there's no point
in
moving on.
We figured it out.
It only took us 19 episodes. So, you know, not even that standard 22, 23 broadcast.
We got a shortened
season.
Yep.
We did. But yeah, that's it for this week and for the foreseeable future. Again, thank you everyone for listening. You can follow the show on Twitter if you wish at this point at PeakTV Podcast. And you can follow Laura definitely because she will still talk about TV, especially Survivor. You can follow you
at Liliana. I'll also talk a little too much about Big Brother.
Of course you will. And again, Gilmore Girls is premiering in the next month. And for that, you can follow Sarah at
Big Damn TV Geek. And I'm already having crazy feels about it all over my Twitter page. So just be prepared for that.
Yes, we will certainly need to be prepared for that. And you can follow me for general pop culture ramblings, including television, at Regis Bo. So that's it for now. Thank you.
Bye.
See ya. Bye.
We did it.
We did it. Oh my god, this is 2 hours. I'm gonna edit this.
Yep.
I know, and I'm very sorry. Like, I saw you yawning, and I know you need to rest. So I'm very sorry.
That's quite all right. No, it's fine. It's not like I have anything to do.
Yeah, tell us when we should hit stop.
We should hit stop on 3.
Oh no, I have to open. I have to find my audacity. My audacity's hiding. Okay, now I found it.
That's okay.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, let's click stop on 3. 1, 2, 3.